Well, welcome. It is great to have you with us today as we're continuing our series on maestros. Today we are looking, as you can guess, at Chopin. And if you've never seen a portrait of him, often even in the portraits that are taken of him throughout time, you see that he looks a little bit sickly, honestly, because he struggled his whole life with ongoing sickness. Some doctors think it was actually tuberculosis he could never quite get over. And like with a lot of things in life, that often as long as we can solve our own problems, right, we feel pretty good. It's when we encounter something we can't solve, we can't get over, or it's just so ongoing, it creates frustration. And for some people, that's a chance to give up on God. For some people, it's a chance to lean into God. With Chopin, what we're going to find is that out of his challenges, it's out of his obstacles, it's out of his difficulty that we actually see him express and compose some of those beautiful pieces of music out of the pain and out of the difficulty, like the one you just heard. We'll hear the backstory on that just a little bit later. So thanks for being here today as we dig a little bit more into what does it look like to have a composer for life, a conductor for life, someone who can take those sour notes, those minor notes, and turn them into an incredible melody. Well, not only did Chopin's music impact his day, but you can actually hear it in songs on popular radio today. So you hear this next song. It's a song about searching for love, searching for meaning, trying to find something out there, some kind of transcendence, some kind of higher meaningfulness, some type of love and relationship that can answer the longings and searching of life. See if you recognize a song, and inside of it, see if you can recognize a little bit of Chopin. So who thought you'd hear a little Barry Manilow this morning, as well as some Chopin? That was actually Chopin's melodies put right there in the middle of Barry Manilow. In fact, when you think about that song, Could It Be Magic? I think we're all looking for some kind of melody or feel or transcendence to help make sense of what can often be a broken and very weird world that we live in. So in fact, put up that slide of Barry Manilow here. It's 1835, he writes this piece. It's the prelude in C minor you heard there in the middle of that song, Op. 28, number 20. That's the piece that was embedded into that song, and it gives voice, right? Even if you're not a God person or a spiritual person, there's a sense of which, well, I've longed for love. I've searched for answers. I want something like that. The music gives voice to what you feel and what you long for and what you think. Like I said, Chopin had a really tough life. In one sense, he was a celebrity. He's known as the Polish Mozart of his day. Very popular. He played before the elites. He played before dukes. The Russians came into Poland at age 5, overtook all of Poland, put a duke in charge, a Russian duke. So they were in occupied territory. But even at 5 years old, that duke, the Russian duke in charge of Poland, gave somewhat a lot of freedom for the arts in Poland. But they were still in occupied space. Because Chopin's father was a very well-esteemed teacher in the music departments there in Warsaw, he often played and had his students play for the elites in Poland. Well, sure enough, because of that, his son, who's getting increasingly popular for knowing he's the Mozart of their time, is going to play before huge stadiums at age 8 years old. He'll even play several times before the Duke. In fact, the Duke had a real anger problem. Imagine the guy who's your czar, it wasn't called that, but the czar in control of your whole territory has an anger problem, and his wife thinks the best way to deal with her husband's anger is to have him listen to Chopin's music. Think of the pressure. I'm playing a piece of music, and I'm trying to keep the guy who's in charge of our whole country from getting too angry and doing something we don't want him to do. Whew, that's a pressure cooker. And yet doctors say that, based on the evidence we have in history, almost his entire life he struggled with coughing and sickness and ongoing, couldn't be solved, pain. Many think it was undiagnosed, unsolvable tuberculosis that he struggled with. And yet its music poured out of, his art poured out of his pain in such a way that it brought people together. Reminds me of a quote that I've heard for many years. It says that God whispers to us in our pleasures. He speaks to us in our conscience, but he shouts to us in our pain. Pain is a megaphone God uses to rouse a deaf world. Like, no, that's the opposite. When you see pain, people turn away from God. He's not helping. He's not doing his part. But often when you come to the end of yourself, when you encounter something you can't solve on your own, it's God trying to get your attention, that maybe there's some source of strength, some source of meaning that's beyond just comfortable circumstances. In fact, my wife and I just returned from Greece, and while we were there, we were touring for a couple series I'm going to do next year of the church. And a guy who was in our group said, "Can I take you to lunch?" And I said, "Sure." So my wife and I go to lunch with him, and he says, "I grew up as a Hindu. I believed in Hindu religion. I practice it. I became a follower of Jesus because I looked at the evidence and found that what he offered and what he claimed was true." I said, "Well, that's awesome. Tell me about that." He said, "I've heard you and your wife talk about your ongoing challenges, some of the difficulties of things you have to manage all the time, some how hard life can be often in the midst of both special needs and other pieces. And yet what exudes out of you and your wife on this trip is such joy. I'm a Christian, but I haven't figured out how to do what you're doing, which is joy in the midst of challenges." And we just had this awesome lunch talking about how can we find kind of a melody to life that lets even the sour notes and the minor notes become a great part of the composition in life. So today I want to look at that. How did Chopin do that, and how can his music and the music of God help all of us do it? We're going to look at what it looks like to be humble, how music helps us be heard, and where our heart is when we encounter difficulty. Let's start with humility. Let me give you an interesting definition of humility. Often a proud person looks at life and says, if God's here, I'm going to process God through the lens of pain. And because I don't have the circumstances I deserve or like or prefer, God must not be good. God must not care. God must be angry at me. I'm going to process God through the lens of pain. And God, if you could take the pain away, then maybe I'll give you a shot of being interested in you. And if you've been through pain, if you know someone who's been through ongoing pain, especially with health like Chopin had, it's easy to say, you know what, God's not caring about me, why should I care about him? But humility says, I don't have the big picture. I don't always understand what's going on, why it's going on. So I'm not going to process God through the lens of pain. I'm going to instead process pain through the lens of God. I don't understand this. I don't even like this. But I'm going to trust there's a good, meaningful process that can grow me, that can help me. So God, I'm going to come from a humble place of saying, I don't understand this, but help me process this so I can find hope, comfort, and strength. As I mentioned at the beginning of this series, one of the most popular musicians of all time, I showed you the stats, 50 times more sales than the Beatles, plus Taylor Swift, plus Mozart, plus Beethoven, all put together, was King David from the Bible. He wrote these psalms, which is a fancy word for songs, that became played since 1000 BC to help people process through music pain and faith and gratitude and joy and sorrow. This one I want to look at today really partners well with Chopin, because in the same way Chopin gave voice to pain, so did David. Here's what it says in Psalm 34. I will bless the Lord at all times. If you're with us a few weeks ago, you realize that David went through some difficult times. Father-in-law is trying to kill him, literally. He gets thrown out of his family, gets chased around. He's hiding out in caves, trying not to be killed. And yet he's going to bless the Lord at all times. His praise, thinking about God, will continually be in my mouth. Wow, don't you see how bad your life's going right now? Yeah, but I'm going to put God first and the pain second. My soul will make its boast in the Lord. The humble will hear of it, hear what I'm doing, how I'm processing it, and be glad. So I'm going to magnify, think of a magnifying glass, I'm going to magnify God in the circumstance, I'm going to exalt God in the circumstance, rather than exalting or magnifying my pain. Now, if you think about going through pain, what do you need when you're going through pain? You need comfort, you need to know you're not alone, you need to know that, could this at all be meaningful? Like, I don't mind meaningful pain, no pain, no gain. What's really drains your soul is when it feels like meaningless pain. There's no purpose to this. So he's saying, what I do is when I'm brought low by pain, I aim high with my mind and my mouth. I'm going to say things that are true about God. I'm going to say things that are true about hopeful in my heart all the time. That's what helped him process that humble idea of processing pain through the lens of God. Now, Chopin was very humble. what was unique about his experience is, though he played in front of large auditoriums and big musical numbers in huge theaters, he didn't prefer that. He didn't like being the center of attention. He much rather performed what were called salons, much more intimate groups where he would gather together, pull up to a piano. Instead of looking into the spotlights, he got to see people in the eye, see how the music was moving them, how the music was touching them. And though, like I said, he would play before dukes, one time he was given a diamond ring for his playing. So certainly he was known for his success and his skill. But he really was known for these intimate settings where people invite him in just to come and sit at the piano, like a piano's bar, so to speak, and talk and be moved by the music. And people saw a man who was struggling ongoing with sickness play these beautiful pieces of symphony that showed that there could be some kind of tranquility and calm and peace even in the midst of challenge. Now, when David writes his psalm, the one we just read, Psalm 34, the circumstances of him writing it are very, very unique. If you notice here at the bottom, it tells you the background of what happened when he wrote this psalm. David is being hunted by his father-in-law, the current king of Israel. In order to escape the king who's trying to kill him, he runs into the king of the neighboring country's territory. It's called Philistines. Now, the Philistines, if you remember the story of David killing Goliath, if you don't, David killed a big champion of the Philistine army called Goliath and became kind of famous, which got his father-in-law jealous. Well, he's hiding out in the Philistine territory to stay safe from his father-in-law trying to kill him. Somebody recognizes him in Philistine territory as the guy who killed their champion years ago. So they drag David before their king, and they're like, "We got to kill this guy. It's David." What do you do when you're surrounded by your enemy's army? What do you do? David's like, "I'm going to trust God in the most humble way I can think." So if you look at the bottom here, it says, this is David's song when he pretended madness before a king who wanted to kill him. We actually have historical records that what David does is he falls down on the ground, starts drooling all over his beard, and pretends like he's lost his mind. And the king is like, "That can't be David. That can't be the guy who killed off our champion. Get the crazy guy out of here." And they drag him out of there. And David is saved because of how humble he approached the circumstance. And he writes a song about it. Like, "I don't know exactly what God's going to do, but I had to be as humble as I've ever been. But God heard me in the middle of that." Isn't that crazy? That he found this song in this weird, humble way that God rescued him out of the most bizarre of circumstances. Now, Chopin is got the sickness going on, this frustration going on, so he decides he's going to go to the sea. Maybe if I can get to the sea, I get some fresh air, some sea air to help me with this problem. So he heads to this monastery. He gets to the monastery, and the sea air is not helping. In fact, his cough's getting worse and worse. He's choking. He's there with his girlfriend, George Sand, and she and he are at this monastery. Here's the actual room they stayed in, the piano he composed on. And he was trying to give voice to the pain he's in, the frustration of this ongoing sickness he's in, and this longing for just some kind of calm or peace. So here in this little room at this little monastery, trying to get close to God, despite his circumstances getting worse, he writes the piece we heard at the beginning of the service. So I want to invite Jonathan to come back up. And as he plays just a minute of that, I want you to picture Chopin in this monastery at this piano. And it said that while he's composing it, he's coughing and choking, sometimes even coughing up blood while he's composing this piece. And think about something in your life you feel like, "Why won't this go away? Why won't this change? Is there any way besides my circumstances changing, which is what I really want, to find a calm or peace that could speak to the pain I'm in, but also the desire I have for longing for tranquility?" So listen to one more piece of what we heard earlier, but now picture the circumstances he wrote this in. This is Raindrop Prelude in D-flat major. And doesn't that story just make the song even more come to life? You feel the darkness, you feel the frustration, but also there's a melody to it. There's a way in which there's some meaning, and yet you also feel him worn out at the end. "Oh my goodness, I'm so worn out by it all." How about you? Are you processing God through the lens of pain, or pain through the lens of God? And just practically, wouldn't one at least give you the chance for comfort and hope and strength, and the other higher chance of nihilism and cynicism and anger? Just practically, wouldn't that be true? On the other hand, Chopin was known for being a real showman, even from an early age. His dad is his teacher. His dad had a boarding school where he taught young men how to not only be young men, but also how to be great musicians. So people paid large sums to be in this class. Well, the kids were also, all guys, very, very rambunctious. And at age 8, the story is told in this book, Chopin, the Man and His Music, that he comes up and entertains the whole class. Now, this story, depending on where you read it, it changes and modifies, and some's probably urban legend, but the piece we know for sure is that he was impacted deeply by Jewish folk songs, Chopin was, and deeply by Polish folk songs. So in this story, it's said that one day he comes up to the classroom, and the Polish folk songs are known for a lot of ghost stories. And he decides to get his class in line when his dad has left by using the piano to tell a story, a Polish ghost story. So this is not the story he told. We don't know that story, but I researched some Polish stories, and I asked Jonathan here to write an original piece that might sound what Chopin did at age 8 in telling a ghost story. So he walks up to the piano that day, and he blows out the candle. He sits at the piano, and all the kids turn to him. And he begins to read a story and let the piano tell the story. Something like this. In the old moonlit palace by the Vistula, where ancient knights once slept, the floors creaked even when no one walked on them. Shadows stretched long across the stone walls. A cold wind slipped through cracks that no mason could ever seal. One night, a young page boy named Casper stared behind after everyone else had gone to bed, and he heard it first, a faint clink of armor like metal, kissing metal in the dark. He crept along the long corridor, his heart thumping. The torches on the walls were burning low, flickering blue. "Who's there?" he whispered. No answer, only the soft scrape of steel on the stone. Closer now, Casper reached the great hall where the old banners hung. Moonlight poured through the tall windows, and there, standing in silver beam, stood a knight in full armor, tall and still. But something was wrong. His visor was open, but inside was nothing but blackness. The knight raised one iron glove. From it dripped not blood, but moonlight itself, shining cold on the floor. A voice said, "I have waited centuries," the hollow voice echoed, soft as a sigh. "I cannot rest until someone hears my secret." Casper wanted to run, but his legs would not move. The knight leaned closer, armor creaking like old trees in a storm. "Beneath the tallest tree lies my sword and my heart. Take them both, or I shall walk these halls forever." The boy's breath, it came fast. The knight's empty helmet tilted, listening. The whole palace seemed to hold still. Even the wind stopped. Casper felt icy fingers brush his cheek, though the knight had not moved. He turned to flee, and then, crash! A thunderous sound shook the stones. The knight vanished in the swirl of moonlight and shadow. Casper woke up on the floor of the great hall, morning light streaming in. The other boys were laughing and shaking him. "You fell asleep telling stories again," they shouted. But on the wall, behind him, scratched into the stone with an old knight's mark, were two words that no one had seen before: "Thank you." And from that day on, whenever the palace floors creaked for the night, the boys only smiled because they knew a friend was watching over them. Thank you, man. That was awesome. So imagine, he's 8 years old, in a room by himself, sitting at the piano, turns out the lights, and he just mesmerizes with this ghost story all of his friends. What a humility he had. The second thing we're going to look at is how music can make you feel heard. You listen to a song, it just gives voice to that stage you're in, that feeling you need to have or the feeling you do have. Music often lets us hear that we are heard, that someone else has been through or felt what we're going through. And David's music did exactly that. In fact, as he continues in Psalm 34, he says, when I was surrounded by the Philistines' armies, when there was no way out, I didn't think there was any way of escape, I sought the Lord. When you were on the ground drooling on yourself, yeah, that was me seeking the Lord as best I could in the weirdest way possible. And he heard me. He delivered me through that. In fact, he delivered me from all my fear. I'm like, wow, that's a crazy way to be delivered. And now this song gets sung for the next 1,000 years in Israel's history as some of their folk songs. And people, yeah, you know what? Our king was scared. Our king was in a crazy situation. Our king, there was no way out. He tried the most unconventional way possible to get out. He sought God, and God heard him and delivered him out of that. Yeah, well, if God could do that to him, maybe God could do that to me. Maybe if I don't know what to do, I mean, the king, David, who wrote some of the Bible, didn't know what to do. Man, that music reminds me that sometimes we don't know what to do. And David goes on in the song and says, oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Really? Because it doesn't feel like your circumstances are good. Your father-in-law is chasing you down. You're in the enemy territory. You're surrounded by them. Even in the midst of that, God was good. And I want this song to remind you that what you're going through, God can be good in your circumstances too. You can seek God. In fact, you can be blessed, word for happy, the one who trusts in him. Trust in God no matter how sticky or challenging your circumstances. Now Chopin, he's 8 years old. It's beginning to be whispered through Warsaw that he is the new Mozart, the Polish Mozart. So he's going to come and play. This is the last piano he ever played on here in the museum. But imagine him walking up to a piano like this. He's 8 years old. He's playing in a huge auditorium, unlike the typical salons. People have heard of him, but they never heard him. He goes to sit down at the piano, but he's not tall enough to reach the keys. So they literally have to bring out books, and they're stacking them on the piano. Everybody's kind of snickering as this little 8-year-old boy comes out, sits on the pile of books so he can reach the piano, and he begins to play. And the laughing and the snickering and the elbow, and all of a sudden, all of that stops. As people's jaws begin to drop, they have never heard or seen or been part of the beauty of what this 8-year-old is making happen with the keyboard. They're just mesmerized by it. And that will just begin his journey. In fact, he probably would have been as famous as Mozart if his father had pushed him as hard and sometimes exploited him as much as Mozart did. But his father let him grow in his own art, express his own music his own way, and really develop his own style. But it began that day, sitting on top of a pile of books, that he made music that made the elites in Poland and eventually in Paris just realize this music gives voice that I feel heard, I feel understood by what I'm listening to here. I got a guy who attends Horizon. He says to me all the time, he says, Chad, I love coming to the 11 o'clock service because you do songs I hear on the radio. Yeah, whether it's The Who or James Taylor or whether it's Barry Manilow, we don't do a lot of that. But he said, that song, now for the rest of my life, it brings new meaning. I think about it in a different spiritual way, in a different lens that I hadn't before. And I love that that's what we get to do here. We get to take music you might have heard before and just have it point you toward God in a little bit deeper way. Well, he leaves Poland and he heads to Paris where he becomes very, very famous there. He's only been gone for 3 days. He's now about 20 years old. And while he's in Paris, there's a group of Polish cadets who decide that even though Russia has relatively given them some freedom, but they've still been occupying their territory, they decide to overthrow or try to overthrow the Russians, this small group of young men. It's called the November Uprising. And so then they have some success initially. It's pretty disorganized, but they attack the Russians, and they push them back a little bit out of the town. Well, the Russians respond with a full force and come in and obliterate these cadets, and they take full control over Poland. And now they take away the freedom, they take away the arts, they take away a lot of stuff. The borders are now controlled. It is like a military state. And meanwhile, Chopin, whose heart's in Poland, but he's living in Paris, he's just distraught by this. He's in anguish over this. And he sits down and writes this piece of music, Chopin's Etude in C minor, op. 10, number 12. And it's about the Russians crushing that November uprising and how his freedoms were lost and the fears of war in the world were going on. But if you don't know the word etude here, Jonathan taught me this. Etude, which sounds like a fancy thing you might say about music, it's actually, in Chopin's day, was a way of saying calisthenics for your hands. You would never perform an etude. An etude was some very complicated etude you would use to work on your finger movements for your left hand. It might be another etude for your right hand. It'd be like in gym class doing jumping jacks. An etude was jumping jacks. Hey, before the soccer game, we're going to do jumping jacks. We're going to do some burpees. You would never say, hey, come see the game, and you look out at the soccer field, and look at everybody doing jumping jacks. That's ridiculous. Look at everybody doing the burpees on the field. No, no. Those were just training exercises. Chopin changes all of this. He takes these complicated exercises designed to help your hands do movements quicker or faster or softer, and he says, what if we could turn these exercises into beautiful pieces of music? So his etudes, like this one you're about to hear, is actually calisthenics for the hand turned into music. But here's what you're going to notice. The left hand, back to that ghost story, is telling a story. The left hand represents the army of Russia coming in and crushing them. The right hand is actually going to represent the angst and the grief and the pain occurring within the Polish people during the time. This etude mostly focuses on the left hand. You can see the left hand does a whole lot faster work than the right hand. But look at how these two hands come together to give voice to the anguish, the pain, the loss of freedom the people in Poland were feeling. Feel that moment in history. And now listen to Chopin's Etude in C minor, op. 10, number 12. You can see why that would be finger exercises, right? That's a lot of motion. Working on that, and then he turned it into a piece of music, and now that became like an anthem for Poland. Oh my goodness, this music lets me feel that I'm heard. Someone expresses what's going on inside of me, expressing the pressure I feel like I'm under. That's what David's music did as well for generations. It became part of what we call the Bible or the scriptures, that God knows what it's like to be in a broken world, and he can work even through that, and yet also gives you a voice to grief and difficulty. Well, lastly, we bring to the heart, and this is the craziest story of Chopin, probably, of any of them I researched. And I think it speaks to a principle. I want to talk about the principle before I tell you the story. I may live in one place, but my heart belongs in another. He lived in Paris for the bulk of his adult life before he dies. He's going to die around 39. But his heart was always in Poland. He always thought about Poland, prioritized Poland, thought about what was going on in Poland, even while he was in one place. His heart and mind was in another. Now, David says something similar, and it's actually a principle that runs through the entire Bible that helps you process whatever difficulty you're in. So let me tell you how David says it first, and then somebody who quotes David later on. He says, the righteous cry out. Man, life's going to be hard sometimes. But I want you to know the Lord hears when you cry out. And he delivers you out of all your troubles. Really? Doesn't look like you're delivering me out of all my troubles. He says, well, I want you to know that when you're going through troubles, the Lord is near those who have a broken heart. You can know you're not alone. And he will save those with a contrite spirit. All right, I'm going to try and process pain through the lens of God, not vice versa. Then he kind of is realistic to say, but just know, many are the afflictions of the righteous. I thought I got delivered out of those things. Well, maybe not right now, but eventually you can know they will. And you can know in the middle of it, God's near you and going to work through it. God delivers him out of them all. So it's like two things. How can these both be true? That life is going to be hard and you're going to have affliction, but you can have the promise that it's not meaningless pain. God will eventually deliver you from it. Yeah, how can those two things both sit at the same place? Well, Peter is a follower of Jesus. And he quotes this psalm, Psalm 34. You'll recognize the taste and see God is good line. And here's how he says it to make it practical to people going through hardship in his day under the Romans. He says, to the pilgrims, I want you to know that when you're going through this, you can grow because of it. If indeed you have tasted and seen that God is gracious and good, I beg you, and here's the word again, as sojourners and pilgrims. All right, so what's a pilgrim have to do with this? What is a sojourner? A sojourner is somebody who comes from one place, they're passing through another place to get back to their destination. In other words, I don't live here. I'm not going to pound my stakes too far into this place because I'm actually from another place. He says, you need to think about, as you go through this life, all the happiness you need is not going to come in this temporal world. You actually were designed for another world. And that ultimate world, what he would call heaven, is the place when all right will be rewarded, all evil will be judged. But you're not there yet. So while you're a pilgrim sojourning through this world, keep your priorities on that other world. Keep your desire that ultimate justice comes in the next world. Still enjoy what you have, but don't expect it to be heaven on earth. Instead, keep your heart not where you live, but where you're going. That's where the idea of pilgrims and sojourners comes from. Well, that's what literally Chopin does. So he's 39, still struggling with tuberculosis, still got all this gack. He's getting close to death. He says to his sister, one of my deepest, darkest fears is that I would be buried alive. So when I die, or when they think I'm dead, make sure they remove my heart, literally cut out my heart. Before they bury me, I want to make sure I'm dead. So sure enough, he does die. They remove his heart. Then he says to his sister, my heart has always been in Poland. Make sure my heart gets buried in Poland. So his sister takes his literal heart, sticks it in a jar filled with some kind of alcohol, whatever their equivalent of formaldehyde was, gets on a train from Paris, heads to the border, controlled by the Russians. How do you explain that one to TSA? She sneaks her brother's heart across the border. And to this day, you can find his heart buried behind the concrete, here buried at the Church of the Holy Cross in Poland. And on this plaque where his heart is located, it says, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Don't fully lean in to your need for peace and comfort and joy in this life. Keep your treasures, your priorities, your focus on the next life. For where your treasure is, your heart will be also. You may live in this world that'll often kick you in the teeth, but realize you're not from that world. The reason you want a world with no pain is because there once was one. The reason you want a world with no pain is because there once will be one. So as you're passing through as a pilgrim, keep your focus on where your heart can be, and that's a secret to living life. So what's the application to all of that? Well, I think it's how do we find a song of love as we go through the challenges and difficulties of life. And that song of love, whatever it would need to be, would have to tell me that, hey, pain can be mindful. I can think about it in a certain way that doesn't lead to nihilism. I need a way that's not only it's mindful, it's also meaningful. I don't mind pain if it's meaningful. What would help me realize that this pain can help me, can grow me, I'll be rewarded for doing the right thing, right? I want some kind of song conducted in my life, composed in my life that says, pain can be mindful, it can be meaningful, but also it's momentary. This isn't going to last forever. And the best example of someone who did this, who lived this out and offered this song was Jesus. Jesus, at the end of his life, he's talked about love and loving God and loving others. And how did he get rewarded for that? They pound nails into his hands and into his feet. And while he's being nailed on this cross, talking about love, he's going to demonstrate how to love his enemies in this moment. And he's actually in his mind singing a song that David wrote from 1000 BC. It's called Psalm 22. It comes out of his mouth while he's on the cross. My God, why have you forsaken me? Psalm 22, verse 1. It talks about how the Messiah, which is who he is, would have his clothes divided. He's seeing it being lived out right here in front of him. It says in that song that when you're going through that, you can trust in the Lord, he'll deliver you. Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. It talks about remembering that God's been with you since the time of your mother's womb. He thinks of this line, Jesus says. He looks down, mother, your son, John, take care of her. John, take care of my mom. He's literally got this song of love he's singing and meditating on while he's going through the worst moment of the worst day of his life. And in his crucifixion and resurrection, he then comes out and shows that he could defeat death, that he took on the worst of evil, the worst of hatred, the worst and nastiness of all life has to give you. And he showed how to love his enemies, the Romans who are crucifying him. Because on that cross, he says, "Father, forgive them. Forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Don't know what they're doing, this pound of steak into your hand." And you're like, I've never seen a song like this. I've never seen a love like this. I've never seen someone die like this. If there's a song that can bring meaning and mindfulness to that, can show that he's going to raise himself in 3 days, this is going to be a momentary problem, a horrible problem, but momentary, I want that song in my life. So I'll invite the band to come out and do this song. And it might be a song you recognize, it may not. But it speaks to how all of us are longing for a great symphony, a great piece of tranquil, peaceful, transcendent music that gives us access to strength, gives us access to purpose, that puts our heart in a place that's secure, rather than the temporal ideas of hoping things might be a little more comfortable for another week or year or decade. How about you? Have you found a song of love that can make sense of the craziness of life? Listen to these words. They're the words of someone singing about Jesus. Well, great, let's pray together. Maybe you'd like just to reach out and say, God, I need some of that music in my life. And maybe you got some notes you can't really make sense of and really would like to start processing that pain through the lens of God. Let's pray together. Just say something like this to God. Say, God, I invite your song into my life. I've never seen anyone die the way I just heard that you died, loving your enemies. I want that song playing in my ears. Forgive me, my arrogance of judging you based on my circumstances. I invite you to be my conductor, and I invite you to be my composer. In Jesus' name, amen.